It won't be edited, right? It'll just be the raw files, but you can look at them and maybe that'll be helpful, okay? So, here we go. I guess most of you know that normally we'd be doing a retreat in Arnprior. For those of you who aren't familiar with our Ottawa family, we rent a beautiful Christian retreat center on the Ottawa River. And every September around this time or October, we gather there. But it's on the Ottawa River, and the Ottawa River there is probably a mile wide. It's just gorgeous. And it has some old growth pine trees. So we all love going there, and we've been doing that for years and years and years. But this year, obviously, we can't do that. And that retreat center only holds about 35 people usually. It's big in acreage, but small in living space. So here we are. We have twice as many people. So that is a good thing there.
Ajahn.
Yeah.
Ajahn, could I just interject for a minute?
Yeah.
I just got a note saying that there's a bit of an echo. I'm wondering if you could move a little bit closer to the mic.
Sure. Yeah. Keep me informed of that kind of stuff. Okay, let's try. How's that? Is that better?
No.
No, still echo. Everyone's getting echo? Shake your heads. Yes. Some no, yeah. Some yes. So is it your tech or mine? So if everyone said yes, I think it's my tech. But if some say yes and some say no.
People are saying that it's better than before.
It is better than before. Well, let's get this right first. Have we put it softer? Yeah. Oh, this is a bit softer. Is that better? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing. About the same, better?
I think it's a bit better.
I think it's better.
Okay.
I think it's the echo in the room.
In the room. Well,
yeah.
Could someone take the walls out? is that about it? Is that as good as we can do?
I think it's fine. I think it's quite manageable.
Okay. I can't think of any, unless we use the phone.
No?
No?
Okay.
Okay, we'll give that a go and keep trying with your own tech. Otherwise, like maybe if you're using earphones sometimes, that might give an echo, take them off. Just play around with your own tech and then give us a note and we'll see, we'll see what we can do. Okay? All right. So this is all part of the retreat, right? There's no part of this experience which isn't part of the retreat. So some of it will be, will flow nicely, and some of it will be like this. And our attitudes to this are, I would say, trying to be, peacefully coexist with the way things are. Obviously, that's what the whole life is about. So before we start the retreat, what we usually like to do is do some recitation, some chanting. And as you know, if you've been following some of our stuff online, we've been doing the Itipiso chant. So if you look up in your chanting texts the Tisaranaguna, would you have that somewhere? Which starts with Itipiso Bhagava Arahang Samma Samputo. And that's a chant that is used a lot in devotional practices in Theravada Buddhism. It's used around pilgrimage sites. I think one of our monks does 108 of these recitations for his meditation each day. So that takes about 2.5 hours. So There is a tradition, you're probably more familiar with the Tibetan tradition, where practitioners will take a recitation and use that as their kind of grounding and focus. So this is one chant that is used in that way. So let's do this together. We'll mute you, but we'll have our voices. We'll do this 3 times. So it's a reflection on the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Very traditional in Theravada Buddhism. So those of you who are unfamiliar with it, you can just listen, or you can try to chant along. And we'll do three rounds of it to start the retreat. So this is our way of paying respect to the Buddha, to the Dhamma and the Sangha, and it's always this sort of reverential beginning of our practices and our endeavors through the Buddhist traditions, the Theravada tradition. Yatipi soa bhagava
araham samma sambuddho vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro purisadamma sarati sata deva manusana buddho bhagavati savaka Chatang vedita bho vinyu hiti supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho ujjupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho nyaya patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sami patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho yadidam chattari purisa yugani atta purisa purgara esa bhagavato savaka sangho aruneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anuttaram punya ketang lokasati tipiso bhagava araham samma sambuddho vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro sa dhamma sarati sata deva manusanam buddho bhagavati savakato bhagavata dhammo sandetiko akaliko ehi pasiko opanaiko pachatan Tamo vinyo iti supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho ujjupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho nyaya patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sami patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho yalidam chattari purisa yugani atta purisa purgala esa bhagavato savaka sangho aruneyo paruneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anuttaram punya ketang lokasati tipiso bhagava araham samma sambuddho vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro sa dhamma sarati sata deva manusanam buddho bhagavati savakato bhagavata dhammo santitiko Ekko ehi pasiko opanaiko pachatam vedita po vinyu iti supatipanno bhagavato asavaka sangho ujjupatipanno bhagavato asavaka sangho anyaya patipanno bhagavato asavaka sangho asamichi patipanno bhagavato asavaka sangho yadidam chattari purisa yukani yata purisa purgala esa bhagavato asavaka sangho bahuneyo bahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anuttaram punyaketam lokasati.
Okay, so sound is still good? Shaking heads, 75 heads. in Theravada Buddhism, there are certain formalities which are ritualized. I kind of think of them as high church. So the next part of the retreat would be to undertake the five precepts. Most of you are familiar with that. And we bring in these formalities. Somehow it becomes a kind of cultural norm of remembrance. And if you do it sincerely, then I think it has the power of a whole culture taking on this kind of work, taking on this kind of lifestyle, taking on these kind of moral principles. At least that's the way I see it. So, I was first trained in Thailand, and I have a lot of Sri Lankan friends and Thai friends and Burmese friends and Malaysian friends and Cambodian friends and so on, who Singaporean friends and so on, who are embedded in Buddhist cultures or very, very connected to them. And these rituals, when done as a body of practitioners, are very, very beautiful, very lovely to do. If you're more from a secular background and you're not used to these things, they're not necessary, so don't worry about it. But there is a beauty in ritual if it's done from the sincere heart rather than just as a sort of cultural thing, artifact that you have to do. So it's not a necessary thing, but it has a lot of beauty in it. So the idea in the five precepts is that one of the congregation asks a monk for the five precepts. Obviously, you don't have to ask me to be moral. I hope you're doing it without my permission. But so it's not really that kind of a thing, but it's a formal sense of determination that all of us living together in this virtual retreat are going to undertake to live in a way which is respectful of each other, which is kind to each other, which is honest to each other, which has a sense of restraint in our lifestyles. And I'm sure we're already doing that, but this is a kind of classic way that any function in Theravada Buddhism begins. So if you could turn, I think Nisanka, were you going to ask for the five precepts? Is that right? Is Nisanka alive out there? Where are you? Where are you, Nisanka? Oh, there you are, Nisanka. Okay. So if you would all just turn to your hymnals. And see if you can find the five precepts there before. And then Nisanka, if you unmute yourself, then I'll be able to hear you. Or can the host unmute Nisanka? Vivian, you got that?
Yeah, Nisanka, you can unmute your mic.
There you go. Nisanka was just here the other day. There you go. Okay, please, Nisanka. So for those of you who know the tradition, please just follow along with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. If you help me, if you do it, yeah, do it.
Namo tassa.
Then I know I'm holding chanting.
Namo tassa arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.
Tissaranagamanam nititam. Panatipata veramani sikapadam samatiyami.
Panatipata veramani sikapadam samatiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. Adinadana veramani sikapadam samatiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. Kame sumi cha chara veramani sikapadam samatiyami.
Kame sumi cha chara veramani sikapadam samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct.
I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct.
Musavada veramani sikapadam samatiyami.
Musavada veramani sikapadam samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from lying.
I undertake the precept to refrain from lying.
Sura mera yama japama datana viramani sikapadam samatiyami.
Sura mera yama japama datana viramani sikapadam samatiyami.
I take the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
Imani panchasikapadani silena sukatinyanti silena boga sampata silena niputinyanti tasama silam visotaye.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
You got the best sadhu, don't you? We have B staying with us, and she's got the best sadhu in North America. Okay. Here we go. So it's just some thoughts on, you know, when we do a retreat in Arnprior or when you come to the monastery, usually you undertake what we call the eight precepts. So the third precept becomes the precept on celibacy. So rather than talking about fidelity, we talk about celibacy. And then the precept on food is to not eat at inappropriate times. So this isn't a moral precept. Either celibacy, it's not really a moral precept. It's a precept of renunciation or non-distraction. And so with the precept on food that you usually take with the eight precepts, The idea is that basically you're not using food as a distraction. You're using food as nutriment, you know, taking care of your body, whatever it needs. But then if you get bored or disinterested, not to go to food as a distraction. That's really what it's about. So it's a kind of simplifying of your life. So in terms of living in your own home, you're with your families and you don't want to be too weird with them, right? And yet you want to have some kind of space and so on. So you judge for yourself what would be an appropriate kind of format. If you're on your own, then it's pretty easy. But if you're with family, remember that they're important too, right? So you know, if they just feel you're weirding them out by eating only chocolate and cheese in the evening or something odd like that, then, you know, just have a whatever, right? So, but I think the idea of restraint is that you set boundaries. You say, okay, I'm going to eat at these times. And then outside of those boundaries, you watch the desire for distraction. And it's not a moral issue. It's more like an issue to calm the mind, to settle the mind, rather than reacting to any impulse of restlessness. So the same also applies to the whole thing about entertainment. So there is so much media available, and very good things, and very horrible things too. But on this retreat, see how you can really not let the world of media stimulate your mind. So, like, I would really recommend not watching American politics ever. But that's up to you. That seems like a form of self-torture, but anyway, people are weird. Or, you know, whatever sort of grabs you towards those screens, they're very compelling instruments of distraction. And some things are very interesting. So I like to look at YouTube videos of woodworkers. So, you know, it's not a moral issue, but at some point, especially on a retreat, you want to just look at the desire to distract, not as anything right or wrong, but just as a kind of energy which keeps you pulled out to the world of experience. And then when you notice it as a pull, and then you have a boundary, then you can be fully conscious of the pull of sense experience without trying to get rid of it. And as you take that witnessing posture, you start to calm the mind down. And that obviously depends on what you're doing. So if you're a doctor and you have to answer emails from your patients, fair enough. That's why we did the five precepts on this retreat rather than do the eight precepts. So just consider how you can make this time as least distracting as possible. But then you have, you know, the other kinds of sense experience like nature, trees, the color of the sky, the movement of a squirrel, unless it's in your attic, can be very calming and very uplifting. But it doesn't have a whole bunch of residue in it. It doesn't agitate the mind. So sense experience is neither right nor wrong, but the skillful engagement with it can lead to calm. The unskillful engagement can lead to a lot of agitation. So when I hear people talking about American politics, I mean, they're so agitated by all that. And what for? You know, what's the point? I mean, you know, I guess you got to be informed, but do you? So anyway, that's my take on it. But protect your mind. This is, I think, you know, there's so much toxic stuff that can come into us from all kinds of sources. Do protect your mind. So then you're filling up your mind with really wholesome things. So develop a kind of monastic lifestyle if you can. In your home. And most of you have been on retreats and you've been to monasteries, so you'll have a good sense of that. So maybe, Jane, you were going to do the formal request for the desana. Would you do that? And
Chaloka Deepak
Pati Saham Pati Katanjali Anadivaram Ayacha Ta Santida Sata Parajaka Jatika. They say to Daman Anukam Piman Kajam.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputasa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namasami. So those of you who are unfamiliar with Theravada Buddhism, I think most of you are, but that recitation that Jane just did is a formal request for myself or Venerable Ajahn Pavaro to give a talk. I'll do it today. I'm just kidding. So it's Theravada. We're having a good time here. So I can't, I can't go knocking on the neighbor's doors and say Buddhism is better. We're not allowed to do that. So there always has to be this sense of a request, of a desire for learning, of respect. So we have these formal formalities of bowing and hands in anjali, and these are very lovely gestures to set the tone of respect for the teaching, and hopefully for the experience of the teacher, and then the heart is open to the teaching. And this teaching is a reflective teaching, right? It's not a doctrine to be believed, although believing it is fine, but belief in itself won't really liberate you. So like if you get two people arguing about what does the word dukkha mean? Does it mean suffering or does it mean stress? Well, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you use the words that a teacher or a tradition gives you as reflection. So argumentation about, kind of historical accuracy, that's really off the point. And the thing about language is that sometimes scriptural language and doctrinal language becomes that. It just becomes a kind of position that people take. And you say a word and they say, oh, I know what that is, but they don't reflect on it. But if you didn't have a teaching, on the other hand, if you didn't have a teaching, you wouldn't have the Buddha's word. You wouldn't have an entry point from an enlightened master, from an enlightened being, into the problem of suffering. So whatever language I use, like we were just thinking about the word virtual, myself and Venerable Amarasiri before this meeting, virtual comes from virtue. So what's the connection? Strange, isn't it? Virtual, virtue. And then we went on and on and on. But that's not Dharma, that's just language. Right? So what? So I get a definition of virtue, being in virtual, very clever. But that's not really Dharma, because it's not reflective. So the reflective capacity takes the words of a teacher and then tries to translate them into personal experience. And obviously my words may have a different connotation to you than to me. I may use the word virtue, say, which isn't a common word now I find in my society, and might sound very Victorian and, might have connotations to you which aren't actually what I mean, right? So language as reflection is very important to say, well, what's the guy talking about really? Rather than, this word means exactly this or that. What's the tone of it? And Ajahn Chah would say it's like listening with your heart. So don't listen with your head, listen with your heart. So the head is kind of goes, sometimes in listening to Dhamma, it goes into a kind of critical, judging, analytical part of consciousness. Well, whereas listening with the heart is like receptive and allowing the ideas to come into you and then seeing, okay, where does that fit into my understanding of my own spiritual practice? That's, I would say, listening with the heart. So we have 6 days, is it? I think 6 days together, which is the longest virtue retreat I've ever done, and maybe all of us have done. So we just did that retreat with the Singapore Malaysian friends and others, which was I think, 3 days. So this will be interesting, see how it works. And we have the schedule. So those of you who can't fulfill the schedule because you're in different time zones, we will, you know, we'll try to post at the end of the day, the talks. And then you, you know, create your own schedule, whatever way you can. Meditation, I was listening to a podcast this morning on the rebooting of the education system in South Carolina. And it was quite interesting how difficult everyone is finding going back to school. Teachers, the government agencies, the mandates that the government's giving, the kids, the parents. It's a very, very, very complex problem. And then the podcast had to go to break. So the guy said, stay tuned. I'll be back after the break. And I was, you know, taken by that word, tuned, stay tuned. And that's a kind of good way to look at or to consider what meditation might be about, like tuning into something. I find that more helpful than concentration. I find that word more helpful. Again, it's just words. Tuning into something, being attuned to something. What? Something wholesome, something good, something that brings happiness and pleasure to the heart. So tuning, like tuning in. And then like staying tuned to that for long periods of time. Somehow samadhi, maybe something like that. So what I like to attune myself to is affection. I'm finding that's a, for me, the last few months, the word affection is a really beautiful word. I'm finding it really rich in meaning and not intellectually, but rich in sensitivity, I think. So what I do with my own practice, I find a word, not just one, you know, I have a vocabulary, but I find maybe one word which I find kind of tunes me into something which is very, very important. And for me, very important is the whole realm of the heart and the attunement to that which is wholesome in the heart. And so the way I attune to affection is I do it a lot through photos. So I have in my photos and statuary, I have very few open walls now in my room. I have pictures of Ajahn Sumedho and Lompa Cha and my first teacher and Lompa Liam and pictures of the Sangha and Sri Ramana Maharshi and Jean Klein and even Indra. Even Indra's up there. So I have all these photos and they're all very, very meaningful to me. And when I look at a photo of someone that is dear to me in whatever way, it might be familial, it might be through my gratitude to teachers or whatever, when I look at that picture, I don't really have to think much, but that tunes me into affection and gratitude and all those aspects of the heart which are very important to me. And if I sustain that, both by visually looking at that, and I do that. I'll be, you know, writing an email and getting bored with it, and I'll look at Sri Ramana and just look at the gaze of his eyes, or I'll light a candle to my mom, or I'll look at, I have a huge picture of Lompa Cha staring across the wall, and I just look at him. And I'll always try to return to this attuning in to affection. And that's not sentimental. It's not like it's not sentimentality where I'm thinking, oh, Lompa Sumedho, I love you so much, I wish I was with you. It's not that, it's not in thought actually, it's in the body, it's in the energy, it's in a kind of vibration, isn't it? It's a kind of a tune that the heart can be attuned to, or a note maybe like a note, if you see what I mean. And so if I do that a lot, and then I do that in my practice of just formal sitting practice, or I do that with the animal realm, or I even do that with the sky or the blueness of the sky. There's a lot of beauty around which can evoke that sense of affection in me. Then the negative parts where the ego is created, the fears and the aversions and the harsh judgments and the the self-criticisms that might come up, they now come up within a field of affection. They come up more and more as I practice within a certain there's a certain note playing, and that note is one of affection. And so when another note comes in of some kind of aversion or greed or whatever it is, then that note of this other scale, the scale of egotism or selfishness in an unskillful way, is noticed very, very strongly. Why? Because now there's a tune, there's a note that is appropriate, that is proper, that is still, that is loving, that is caring. And then when the other comes in, it's noticed. Now, if I can then return to the tuning into the affection, then the negativity has no power. Now, what happens, I think, for all of us is, as I said on that retreat with the Malaysian Singaporean group, we're very good people. You know, we wouldn't be here if we weren't. And we suffer oftentimes from a high sense of idealism. And as soon as these negativities come into consciousness, we very quickly judge them and try to get rid of them. And get caught in a sort of tussle with them. So the practices, and when I talk about affection, I'm talking about metta bhavana. And I find myself always trying to use different kinds of words, because when you say metta bhavana, then oh yeah, I know what that means. But perhaps if I use a different kind of word, it might trigger off a more reflective response from you or from them. I don't know. Consider affection. Well, what is that in the human heart? That's important, isn't it? And is that just something that comes from the external? Like, is my life only affectionate when I am struck by some image or person who brings that out into me? Or can I bring that back into the world? And I would say this is what meditation is trying to do for us. It's bringing wholesomeness and goodness, not only for ourselves in some kind of a personal way, but also it's what we can give back to the world. We can, you know, it's like the ocean comes in, right? The ocean comes in into the shoreline, and then there's the reaction. The ocean comes in and there's the shoreline. Is that all we are? Like, is that all we are, is just reactive? And so when things are wholesome and beautiful, we are affectionate, and when they're not, we're grumpy. Well, no. No, we don't have to be victims to the waves coming in. We can actually offer something back. And so meditation, hopefully for me, is something that both brings goodness into my own life, into my own heart, enhances goodness, makes it stronger. But then that my response to the world comes from that place, and there's a joy in that. There's a joy in being able to respond to negativity with a sense, no, I'm not going to take up that tune. That's not a tune I want to play right now, thank you very much. But that's not rejection. That's not aversion. That's not a desire to get rid of. It's more, no, that's a tune. No, I'll go back to the other tune, the tune of affection. So what note, like, for you, could you easily strike that would be wholesome? You might call it calm. You might call it composure, you might call it collectedness, whatever language you want to use. What kind of a tune or an attunement would meditation be about for you? Now, that's different than just trying to get something, right? If you're meditating, you're trying to get some object, some objective experience, then you're in real trouble because you're not really in tune with the way things are. And that's the basic tune, isn't it? It's the capacity to awaken to this moment in all its complexities, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. That is the basic work of the choir, work of the individual in the choir, that you have to come into the moment and know the moment. And so we say awakening to the way things are. And the more we practice, we see how profound that simple instruction is: awaken to the way things are. It's not facile, it's not easy. It's actually very, very profound. The language is very elegant, actually. When Lompo Tsimedo says it's like this, that's an incredibly elegant statement if you're a practitioner. Because if you do that as a reflection, If you do that, it's like this. Then you're in tune with the way things are. So that's the first and primary thing of any contemplative life, be it meditative, be it service, whatever, right? So in your meditations, how do you remember this moment? And how does that work for you? Do you use language? Do you use imagery? Do you just do it? Whatever, right? And then from that awakening, then you can begin to know the tune, the vibration, the energy that's moving through you. Now that's different, I would say, than just the narrative that's moving through you, the storyline, the past and future kind of stuff that we always get involved in. That's kind of not very deep, is it? Like if I feel angry at the neighbor for something, I never see the neighbor actually. But anyway, if I had a neighbor that I could see, and I was irritated at the neighbor, right? If I was just trying to get something called non-aversion, then I'm not really in tune with the very feeling that's going on, right? So this awakening to the way things are is actually quite difficult, because it's more difficult to kind of be critical to yourself. And this awakening is deeper than the narrative. It's like, what's the underlying aramana, or aroma, as they say in Thai? What's the underlying aramana? Well, it's negative, or it's averse, or it's fearful. That's not a judgment, that's a noticing. Right? It's not saying you shouldn't feel that. So that awakened mind is something that, you know, any teacher is going to be banging away until you die, right? You're going to be hearing this forever. And it's amazing how we can forget, isn't it? I mean, we know this. It's not new information. We know this, and yet we can get very much forgot. We can forget ourselves, as it were, in all the narratives of thought, of past and future. So then if you use your meditation as a kind of platform, you tune in to the presence of the way things are, and then you refine that tuning to a sense of composure and collectedness. How would you do that? Would you do that just by blindly concentrating on something? Would that work? Maybe, maybe not. How would you do that? How would you compose your mind and collect your mind? And then, but we are also heart beings. We're not just like, you know, there's something very important about the human condition, which is emotional, not in a negative sense. And the Buddha certainly stressed that with the Brahmaviharas, that we have a capacity for compassion, we have a capacity for caring, we have a capacity for peace. And those are the emotional signs of liberation, of a successful, shall we say, contemplative life, of a fruitful contemplative life, what the heart is doing. And so I find that combination very, very good, the combination of awakening to the way things are, and the sustaining that awakeness through some kind of heart connection. So I use the word affection. Next year, something else maybe, but this year. But it's the same theme. It's the same kind of theme. So I don't know what I'll do on this retreat. I'll probably talk a bit and so on. I never quite know what a retreat is going to be like. And usually I, on a retreat like at Armpraya, I respond to 35 people sitting in front of me. And now this is a different kind of situation. So we'll see where it goes. But just because that's on my mind, affection is on my mind, maybe you could consider that too. What would that be for you? Metta bhavana, affection. What would that be, an important part of your meditative life? And how would that be important? And these are, you know, the questions you have to ask yourself. How could you sustain that attunement? How might that work for you? And then take that into whatever object of meditation you use. Well, obviously I'll teach certain, you know, I'll try to teach certain objects of meditation, but more than just the kind of technique-y kind of stuff, right? What is the kind of whole attitude that you bring to your meditation? Is it one of striving? Is it one of falling asleep? Or does it have affection in it? Isn't that affection important? Affection is pleasurable. And think about it, that if you're going to meditate for 6 days, it'd be helpful if it was pleasant, right? Now, you could do pleasure by just eating tubs of ice cream, but I don't think you'd do it for 6 days. That's not going to be pleasant. So this is a different kind of pleasure because it's allowed. This is actually allowed. The Buddha said, metta is allowed. Do it a lot. And then do it some more. It's because it's beautiful. So if we can make beauty and pleasure not things which are... Sometimes in all religions maybe, pleasure is all sort of equated with evil. Oh no, you're having fun again, Viradhammo. No, that's not the way. And so we sometimes think that somehow maybe we're supposed to just kind of grind it out to enlightenment. But the heart which is enlightened is a happy heart. It's not a miserable heart. Huh? You think of all the great teachers you've met. Do they kind of look at you in misery? Usually they're pretty jolly people. And why is that? Because that's a foundation. Now the teaching talks about suffering and the end of suffering, right? It does talk about the end of suffering, not just suffering. Remember that. So there is an end of suffering. And when we enter into the Brahmaviharas, into the states of heart and consciousness, which are based on affection, are based on goodwill and goodness, then we have a pleasure in the heart, which allows us to investigate and contemplate and hold this kind of work for long periods of time, for long, long periods of time. So I would ask you too, then, in your meditation, what is pleasurable? Well, the body sometimes is not pleasurable. You know, it hurts and so on. Is there something pleasant in your attitude? Or is it one of just like striving? How would you bring that into mind? Then take a picture of someone who is endearing to you. Look at that picture and think whatever you want to think, whatever you feel, don't even think, whatever you feel. Doesn't that feel nice? Isn't that a great feeling? Right? And that's not a tub of ice cream, it's allowed. So then how could I take that pleasantness of affection and sustain that maybe with the breath? How could I combine that attitude of goodness and wholesomeness and then have a kind of affectionate regard with one in-breath? Affectionate regard with one out-breath. Now, this isn't sentimental again. It's actually quite hard to do. But if you could do that, for a few breaths, then what are you doing? You're collecting the mind, composing the mind, but also your heart's kind of open to it. You're not just trying to control the mind in a very, very willful way. So these are some of the considerations I think I'll be probably repeating again and again. So before we have a few more minutes, I'd like to just finish the evening with a meditation. Okay, because that's why we've come together. So let's do half an hour of meditation together. I'll give a bit of guided meditation, not too much. And then we can just sit quietly, because I'm sure we'd like to just be quiet for a while. And then we'll finish by chanting the Itipiso. And then tomorrow morning or afternoon or evening, wherever you might be, we'll come together at my time, 6 a.m. So the 6 a.m. to the 7 a.m. Meditation, I usually don't give much instruction. So if it's a bad time for you in your time zones or whatever, don't worry about it. But if you can make it, like if you're in Eastern and North America, it's a beautiful way to start the day before breakfast. Okay, and then the session after that is 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. So let's do some meditation then. Awakening, I like to use sound. So just listen to sound. So then you're in tune with what's going on now. And it doesn't really matter. It's not the quality of the sound or whatever, but it's that you know it, that you're in tune with it, that you're here with it, you know that you know. And just savor the silence of that. Very simple. And feel your body. Just whatever physical feelings you have right now, let it become conscious. So where might affection come into this? Affectionate regard for your own body. Would that not be a sort of note that you place into awareness itself? A kind regard to your body sitting here. And these simple exercises, just savor the silence of knowing. And then you could localize your attention. You could go to the center of the chest and feel the rising and falling of the chest with the breath. So you could have like a sense of caring, couldn't you? Like caring for that experience. And then into that practice, you can introduce a picture of someone who's dear to you. Say, you could do that on the in-breath. You can name the person or visualize them. And then on the in-breath, let that picture come into your heart. And then the next in-breath, you could do that again. So if you use the name, I use Lompo Sumedho a lot, Lompo. In-breath. And that's like looking at his picture, a sense of affection. So then having connected to affection, I could just be with the breath, with that attitude. So let's sit quietly with those ideas. So, unless I've forgotten something, Jane, we could finish with the sharing of merit chant. Would everyone have that somewhere in your hymnals? Through the goodness that arises in my practice, everyone know that? It's the first line. And then we'll follow that with the itipiso three times. So if you have that in your literature, yeah? So please join me in chanting the sharing of merit first in English.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
And then the Tisarnaguna, the Itipiso, we'll chant three rounds of that.
Itipiso Bhagava Arahaṃ Sammā Sambuddho Vicca Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Sata Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagavati Savakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Opanaiko Pachatam Veditabho Vinyuhiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidancha Tari Purisa Yukani Atha Purisa Purgala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttaram Punyaketam Lokasaditipiso Bhagavato. Bhagava Arahaṃ Sammā Sambuddho Vicca Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavitu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Sata Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagavati Savakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanketiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Upanayiko Pachatang Veditabho Vinyo Iti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidam Chattari Purisa Yugani Yata Purisa Pukkala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Pahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttaram Punyaketam Lokasati Tipiso Bhagava Arahaṃ Sammā Sambuddho Vicca Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavitu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Sata Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagavati Savakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Upanayiko Pachatam Veditabho Vinyo Iti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidam Chattari Purisa Yugani Yata Purisa Pukkala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttaram Punyaketam Lokasati.
Right. Okay. Bon nuit, everyone. Nice to be with you. See you tomorrow, tonight, and so on and so forth. Okay.